because this is the Shh series on manifestation. If you want to find out more, go back to episode 1. My name is Greg Bortstein, host of Open Loops with Greg Bortstein, Conversations That Bend. My guest today, Iris Turner. She is a, well, shamanic healer and cognitive behavioral therapist. Try finding one of those on ZocDoc. The story starts with her meeting Jesus at age 4. Yup, it's Open Loops.
Today on Open Loops, we have Iris Turner, a cognitive behavioral therapist, Reiki practitioner and teacher, and spiritual teacher. But what's intriguing me the most is this natural born shaman aspect of herself, very much well versed in the shamanic arts, and is now even starting a temple. There's a whole lot going on here. We're going to dig into it. Iris, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Greg. It's nice to be on the show.
Yes. You know, this is, you have a lot going on in your background. I mean, I always get very curious. One of the things that I ask people right off the bat is why, you know, when you're well-versed in cognitive behavioral therapy, and then you start doing Buddhism, there are a lot of people, I mean, I know I'm in New York City, that just say, yeah, I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, but I get involved with, but I'm very much into mindfulness and meditation. And that seems to be good. They have a spiritual practice. They're fine. It's rare that you meet someone that then goes, oh yeah, and also I decided to become a shaman, which to me makes me go, what is it about bringing this magic into things? Did you have that trajectory growing up? Was there anything early on in your childhood, or even as you were training to work in healing, that suggested to you that you would be going, that you would go beyond just living in the present and working with, you know, balancing irrational thoughts, that kind of thing? What was it for you?
Well, I didn't know I was a shaman. I was a natural born shaman. My mom told me when I was 6, I have great abilities because I could see angels and dead people. And I just,
there it is. There it is. Yeah. Okay. What? Wait a minute. She told you that?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I would tell her, I knew Jesus was my master teacher. Actually, he was my friend, my secret friend. I would tell her, Jesus said this, and you know, and so on and so forth.
Now, is that unprompted? I mean, did you know about Jesus at all from religious school, or how did that come up?
No, I was only 2 years old. I saw him the first time when I was 2. He saved me from drowning when I went into the lake. And I came out of the lake. My mom was trying, it wouldn't come and get me, but she's standing on the beach, going, and she said, why did you stop? And I said, oh, that man wouldn't let me go any further. And she goes, what man? And I said, oh, I think his name is Jesus. I was aware at 2 years of age. I was awakened at 2. I understood things. I could see people's souls. I a lot of different things. It was just wild, but I was used to it.
Yeah, that is very remarkable. I mean, it's commonly today we hear star seeds. That's a variant of this, the idea of off-world contact, extraterrestrials, children who are able to communicate to these spiritual beings that are ideally off planet, or not ideally, they just are, and they're able to communicate wisdom through people. I mean, what do you think it is about you that gave you the ability to connect with these entities? Or humans, or these spirits, rather. I mean, Jesus is a spirit of the earth, supposedly. You know, what was that? Were your parents like that? I mean, why you think?
No, my parents were not like that. My auntie in Ukraine was like that. I never met her. And my younger sister was a medium. But a shaman is somebody who can do it all. You know, I knew the future. I could see the other world. I could, guide souls and do a lot of different things at a very early age. But my teacher himself did not show up until I was 40 years old, until I was ready.
Were you seeing Jesus throughout your entire 40 years, or did that stop for a period of time? Angels?
No, I've always seen angels, Jesus. I've always seen them all, and I still do. But I shut a lot of it off because it's very distracting.
No. I can imagine. I mean, were you religious at all? Did you ever go to a church service and go, yeah, you're talking about him, but he saved my life? I mean, did any of that happen?
Yes, I did go to church, but it was old Ukrainian. I didn't understand a word they said, you know, because my parents came over after the Second World War from Germany, but my dad was Prussian and my mom was and of course, they barely could speak very much English. So we went to Ukrainian school and Ukrainian church, but I didn't understand it because of old Ukrainian. And then I decided to go out on my own when I was 11 and try different churches out and see. But it wasn't what I expected. They were condemning. They didn't think anyone could connect with spirit, with God, with whomever. And I said, well, I have, you know. So I always got in trouble, so I just kind of dumped that and I went to, let's just do spirit.
It's always the kids that can connect with these spirits that get in trouble. I mean, it's really, they're the real troublemakers. We always go after the high school stoners, but when you're a 5 or 6 year old and you're talking about something that happened in someone's life that they had no idea how you would know, that's going to throw you into tension a lot quicker, I have a feeling. I mean, do you have any stories? Do you remember any time when you said something to an adult that was just, they had no idea how you were able to pick this up about them, and they got upset?
Many times. Could see, you know, the future for people, like, oh, an old boyfriend's going to come back and you're going to see him at some place that you're not expecting to see him, and he's going to want you back. And I told my friend this, and she's, oh, no, that's not going to happen. It happened. A lot of different things like that. I've known when people were going to die too.
Wow. Yeah. Now growing up with that, I mean, obviously I definitely want to hear about how you, what happened at 40 and the person that said you were natural born shaman. I want to know how it all came together. But I also wonder, just when you're living with something like that and your relation to it, were you ever trying to figure out what it was in your 40 years? Did you ever go to a doctor or a neurologist and say, hey, I don't know if it's, you know, I'm seeing things that shouldn't be there. I mean, what was it? How did you manage this throughout your adult life?
No, I never thought I was going crazy or anything like that. And it happened often and all the time. So I knew it was real. And it was in so many different ways. If I wrote a book about my life, people would go, oh, no, that's science fiction. You know, what you see on movies, you know, walking into a vortex and there's a witch there, you know, who opened the vortex. And I'm going, OK, I got to go now. You know, and things.
Wait,
like
have
that.
You done that? Have you walked into a vortex before?
Yeah,
what?
I used to work at the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada, and I was going to go to this library, and that's where I had to pick up some things. And I felt this weird energy moving. And I went, oh, well, you know, this doesn't feel right. I don't know if I should go down there. And I thought, well, God protects me. That's okay. I got to go get these things. So I go in there, and usually there's truckloads of students and people around. There's nobody but one lady with a cloak and her hood up sitting at one of the tables in the library. So I go over to her to say, hey, you know, like, do you know where everybody is? What's going on? But she looked up at me like this, and her eyes were all filled with the sky. I looked at the book, and the words came swirling off the book, and I thought, okay, I gotta go now. So I left, and I went back to my office. And when I got back, I phoned where I was going into the library and said, are you guys there now? And the guy said, why, what happened? And I explained it, and he goes, oh, there's weird things going on around here. We're leaving. We're moving out of this building. It's just not right here. I'm like, oh, yeah, because there's a vortex that people can open and use it to travel in. That's why there's a witch there that, you know, used it just now.
That is, it's very, I'm trying to wrap my head around this because it does feel very much like it's Carlos Castaneda's book, A Separate Reality. It's a totally different plane of existence. And I sometimes wonder with this stuff, is it closer to all of us than we think? For someone like you that is open to this, you have this awareness, you can see it. It's in your field, but if we were to, I'm not sure, maybe walk through the world with peripheral vision, or that's one way to alter your state, or do something else, whether it's ayahuasca or something like that. Would we be able to access these things?
Oh, yes, of course. Especially through shamanic journeying, you don't necessarily need ayahuasca or mescalina or anything like that. You know, my teacher used to use mescalina. Because yeah, then it becomes more about the trip than the spiritual thing, and you can get lost in the addictions. So my teacher had said a good shaman can take people on soul journeys without drugs, and I do that, right? And I've done that for I'm 63 now, so about 23 years, because when my teacher met me when I was 40, and I trained with him for 8 years, and I got my degree through him and other training. And
a soul journey without drugs. I'm not even sure what that means. Are people seeing visions? I mean, what is, can you go into that a little bit? That's very curious to me.
Everybody is different in what they experience. I have a connection to this, like you want to call it, a great shaman in the sky, spirit, whatever, and it will show me things and it'll tell me things, and you know, people didn't tell me, and or I see about their past lives and other things, and the people will go and experience whatever they do. A lot of people say I just go up really, really high and I feel like I'm in heaven, and or a lot of people will experience different kind of beings come to them. You know, I did one
Iris. What'd you do the other day? Tell me what happened.
I did one the other day. A soul journey, and she said, I went up so high I felt like I was going to fall down, and she goes, I was sitting there holding on, but I don't know what I was holding on to. I said, I told you just to relax and let it go.
Are you, I've studied hypnosis, I've led people to go into alternate worlds, I suppose, or explore their subconscious terrain, but trying to figure out what it is you're doing that. I mean, obviously, if you're seeing Jesus at 2 and he's saving your life, you're tapping into some other realm beyond the subconscious. But I'm trying to figure out what exactly, I mean, are you leading people into a trance state? What's an example of what the shamanic work is? It feels very intangible to me. By design, probably.
Oh, well, it is in some ways. Yes, it is intangible in some ways, but then again, in other ways, it's very tangible, because what is this experience? It is a projection of the mind. And so isn't that, but in a different way? A projection.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. Mm. Are there ways that you, Do you have to, I think, okay, here's what I think is interesting about all this. There's some people that it takes a long time to show people how fluid reality is. I'm definitely, I mean, I think I intellectually understand it. I don't always experience that fluidity. And I know I've spoken to many people that say, well, once you realize it's this, and once you start doing these exercises and practicing and then seeing that you can jump into different timelines and stuff like that. Yeah, sure. I imagine after a certain time, you could see reality slippery. But when you're a shaman, I imagine you could, it allows you to have some shortcuts. I mean, do you find that? How are you able to get people to see that their mind is fluid and creating this perception in a way that maybe some others aren't?
Well, it's the energy that you emit, number one, right? If you are vibrating at higher energy level, you can vibrate their soul at a higher energy level. So you bring them up to a higher level of consciousness. You use drumming. I just play online some drumming, and I guide them first through a grounding and centering and connecting to Father Sky, sort of Mother Earth meditation to start with, and then we just take off. It works.
Basically, Iris is vibing. You're vibing high. That's really what it comes down to. You've got the high vibing going. Yeah, that is very interesting. Fascinating stuff. I'm very curious about all this. So you were discovered when you were 40, you said. Now, were you already doing therapy with people in Reiki? Were you just doing therapy? I mean, what point in your life were you before you were coin this natural born shaman?
I was just mostly in administration. Not until 40, and I had a dream that a short little indigenous man was coming from a distance to greet me, and he was my teacher, and that's when I was in Edmonton.
And so wait, you weren't even a CBT person at this point? You were in administration somewhere?
I was at the last administrative position. I was the executive administrative assistant to the Dean of Students at the University of Alberta. But it was time then for me to be tapped. So things, you know, fell into place, and I had that dream, and a huge raven, like huge with a big orange beak, arrived with, and there is no ravens in Edmonton, it's way too cold. That's the end of the tundra there.
right.
Yeah. And so then I had that dream, and I told my husband, in 2 weeks, there's a short indigenous man with really, really long hair going to come to the restaurant he was managing. That's my teacher. Tell him about me. And he did arrive, and my husband told him. So my teacher says, hey, you know, I got to meet your wife. Meets me, looks at me, and goes, I've been looking for you all my life. You're going to carry on my legacy. And I said, well, what's a shaman? And he laughs and says, you silly girl, you've been doing it all your life. You're a natural born one. And I'm like, because I can see ghosts and stuff like that. And he goes, and you have greater abilities than that. And I'll show you. So he trained me in shamanism. And he has two masters, one in psychology and one in linguistics. And he was a university prof and a school teacher. And so he has an integrated, accredited native school. So I got my certification as CBT and Reiki and, you know, anything else that he could teach me.
Well, I even do CBT at that point. I'd go, hey, who needs this stuff? Go right for the gold. I mean, what's the importance of CBT in the shamanistic work, you think?
Oh, I wanted to offer everybody anything that they needed. I wanted to be diversified enough to, you know, help them mentally and emotionally and spiritually. Right.
Interesting. Do you think that there is a, I mean, what if you're working with someone with CBT, how can that connect? How do you can bridge that to the potential to open up a portal inside of them to some higher realm? I mean, is there, I'd be curious how you connect the dots.
Well, I'll tell you about what a usual session with me is. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending. You come and you talk to me about your issues and your problems. And we discuss, you know, we have a little bit of a talk therapy going on there, discuss what's going on in your life. And sometimes I see what you need. And sometimes, you know, I just let the person just share what they can share. And then we do a healing. I heal them with a Reiki and a meditation, a guided meditation to clear the mental, emotional, and physical bodies, and then go into the fourth chakra to connect as best as they can with their soul self or a higher level of themselves, if you don't want to call it soul, and, you know, find a still point, yeah, where they just sit silently, center, and then ground, and off they go happily.
What? This is amazing. I mean, the way you're saying this to me, it's you've been doing this forever. I mean, you're just a natural. You are a natural board shaman. You rattled off the entire session in a very tangible way for something that is intangible. I imagine you're doing more than just helping people with a little work life stress. If you have this kind of gift, off they go. What does that mean? Shamans have a history of being really able to turn people around. I mean, people who have drug addictions go through a shamanic session. And I've heard this in the context of using peyote or ayahuasca, vision quests, and all of a sudden they're done. No more coke addiction. It's over. I mean, what are some of the more remarkable things that you've been able to be a catalyst for in your career?
Well, it's not really me as much. I just give the tools and the energy. It's up to the person. I see people usually on a regular basis, not one time, you know, because we work through everything. But there was this one lady who came to see me, and she had vertigo so bad that she walked along the wall. My house and came up the stairs. And I said, how do you drive your car? What do you do? Bump to bump, bump around until you can.
Right, you know, right.
And she goes, I just managed to do it. And she had vertigo that bad for about 10 years. So I said to her, listen, up to you. You can be done this today if you want, or we can, you know, take a long time to deal with this vertigo. And I said, I know there is also some other issues between you, your chakras in your hip, and, you know, in the first and second, whatever. And I explained a few other things. And so I gave her the first healing, and her vertigo was gone. Boom. And she was shocked and amazed. And I said, well, you're ready to let it go. It's up to you. You believed it, you wanted it gone, and it's gone.
Yeah.
So we worked on other things instead. I saw her continually for another 3 years.
Is it something you have to tune into? I mean, even as you're looking at me right now in the Zoom call, do you see the chakras? Do you see my spirit guides around me? I mean, how much are you picking up at this moment?
I am not that invasive. I won't look unless you let me.
Okay. I don't know how it works. I'm curious if it just like flash, or, and I'm sure maybe sometimes it does, but
yeah it does sometimes, but I try not to look, because like I said, it is very intrusive, and I don't want to be that invasive upon your privacy, right? So, you know, you might not want me to read you, so, you know, I'm not going to read you. It's not fair.
Yeah, Iris, you can read me. I give you full permission anytime. this is all very interesting. You clearly have these abilities. You're out in the world, and you've written a few books about ways that people can, like you said, it's not you necessarily doing the magic. You're also helping people recognize this magic within themselves. After you've done the groundwork, and one of the things that I know that you have two books that you co-authored with Dan Oleksa, Practical Manifesting, Overcome, Realize, Create, and of course, this one intrigues me, The Pessimist's Guide, Manifesting Practical Attraction. I want to know about pessimist manifestation. That intrigues me. But before we go into the subtleties between those two, the flow of abundance that's the theme of these books. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about the law of attraction. I've had a lot of people on talk about manifestation, and they say, well, you know what, Greg, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. However you are right now in this moment, you've manifested it. But abundance itself as a flow, as an energy, it's rare that they've really gone into that. What exactly is the flow of abundance?
It's everything. When you look at life, life force brings not only life itself, but everything that could be. So if you're in the flow, things happen easily for you. Like I got into the flow when my teacher arrived, boom, boom, boom. And, you know, clients started arriving, no problems. I didn't ever had to advertise, and I'm really, really busy. Around the world, spirit would say, hey, this is coming, that is going on, you know, this will be happening, you should do this, you should do that. And this is all the abundance of knowledge and wisdom and the whatever you need to manifest. Abundance is, like I said, everything. I mean, that's the only way I can really put it. I mean, you're either in the flow of it or you're blocking it. Excuse me.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, definitely there is. It's a buzzword in the manifestation. I guess I could call it a manifestation community or the scene. There's definitely you need to untap abundance. You can tap into abundance. There's an abundance in your life. You need to look at the world with abundance. And it's, I wonder, is it really just a mindset thing? Is it a frequency? Are you tuning into a frequency where money and health and success, whatever that means, are all coming in? In your experience, is there an easy way for us to connect to abundance so that it becomes a little more tangible?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. It's a higher vibration, and it's the way you think. It's how you utilize those inborn higher abilities that everybody has. Because, okay, mine are more obvious, but everybody has telepathy, for example. Everyone has that. You know, you can develop it and tap into it. Then you can, you know, not to treat somebody or you abuse somebody or, you know, beat their minds and use them, but you can understand then how that would help you to connect with spirit, right? And that is your guiding force. That is the one that brings the abundance. So you have to raise yourself to a higher level, have the mindset of, yeah, everything is always the way it's supposed to be and it's all good, because in the end, there is, you know, no good or bad. There are the Zen cones like that. There's right is right and wrong is wrong. But there's no right and there's no wrong. Right?
Whoa, that was hypnotic. Yeah. Yeah. So then, but you do say it's something that you can connect with the flow. And again, I mean, I'm saying this as someone that has, in periods of my life, has had a flow of abundance, but it's an abundance of self-doubt. And I could argue that, well, yeah, that was abundant. Oh, the self-doubt was abundant. But could you then say, well, yeah, you're experiencing the flow of abundance. I mean, what's the difference between that and the abundance that is positive?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but it's still the abundance. It's just what you, like you said, the mindset and the vibration. You vibrate higher and you have the mindset of a higher acceptance and understanding, and the higher abilities will kick in. And so you can utilize the laws of the universe to make that happen, the law of attraction. So what do you do to attract money? Well, you have to raise your level to that vibration of a lot of money. But then again, how do you do that, right? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next.
Yeah, how do you do it? Well, there's many laws, like in my the books that Dan and I wrote, that you can tap into and understand how to use those laws to raise your vibration to that level. And also, there's this whole thing about you have to do your groundwork. You got to meditate. You got to release the old mindsets. You got to do this. And then the other thing, because all this is important to get whatever is in the way of higher functioning abundance to flow through, because you have lower functioning abundance right now, right? With the doubt and, I got to make something happen. You know, I don't make things happen. It just comes. I mean, the Galtsan Rempok just showed up on my doorstep. My clients show up on my doorstep. I don't go searching for them.
That feels like a very different wave of frequency to be riding on. I definitely, it's not, certainly since I've started this show, things have changed big time. Started attracting more people, started bringing people on that were more aligned with the type of content I want to put out there. And it's become easier. But I also know there's so much more room for me. There is a way to perhaps bring more money into my life or spend my entire day really focusing on these kind of messages, as opposed to having this be just kind of a hobby or a passion project. And I never know what the next step is. But then I've also heard people go, "Oh, Greg, maybe not knowing is exactly where you need to go." And then I say, "Well, where's the abundance in that? How long am I going to sit in the not knowing?" So it's that tension between trying to figure it out and prioritizing and then letting things just flow through me and letting them come. A lot of mixed messages here. How do I get on track with flow, Iris?
Well, you have to, like I said, let go of the low vibrating mindsets, low vibrating energy. Begin to trust in the universe and God, whatever you want to call it, and know that it'll bring exactly what you need and or want sometimes. Is this in Buddhism, there's three poisons: desire, aversion, and delusion that creates suffering. To have personal desire is then to block the desire of the divine and what's supposed to be. Personal dislikes does the same thing. It blocks the good stuff that can come your way because you're focused on the bad stuff. You need to go through all of that. And sometimes most people need help, actually. Most people need help with that, right? Yeah, to let go of all that low vibrating stuff and that mindset and being helped raised up to a higher mindset. And I understand it this way: God brings me as much money that I need, and if I ask for more clients or more, I'm ready for new clients, okay, then they come. Oh, you know what, I need to make more money, I need to make 4,000 a month instead of 3 now, no problems. And it'll tell me, well, raise your rates or I'll bring you more clients. I'm like, I'll do both. You know why? Because it's the wisdom of showing you exactly what you should do, right? But the unknown is really not unknown. The only thing unknown is the true and absolute that is the clear light mind, if you want to call it, the emptiness. You can't know emptiness. You can't know something that has nothing there. That's the only unknown, but that's where we come from.
Right.
Otherwise, you can do anything you want to know.
Right. So, in terms of when you're moving through the world, and for instance, you say, "Well, I want to bring more clients into my business." How much is it then you going, "Well, I'm actually going to look at this and have a high level executive overview"? I mean, that's very much a corporate mindset, and someone that's an administrator I'm sure can appreciate. Someone could go, let's look at all the things we have in place. Let's look at the lead generation. Let's look at the marketing. Let's look at these KPIs and figure out what I need to ramp up to bring people in. But that to me feels very, doesn't feel like it's flowing. It feels against, I would rather just say, you know what, I'm going to go on and talk to people today and follow what my heart tells me to do. And I just know they're going to come. Is that how you move through the world? I mean, what is your strategy, as they say? I'll put that in quotes.
I don't have one.
So did you really shed this administrative background? You dropped it. You dropped this administration, it seems.
I apologize.
I was going to say, it feels like you shed this administrative skin.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Is it the only thing that I want to do is listen to spirit, God, whatever you want to call it, and channel what it wants done? Because I know it's always the best for myself and others. And it always brings everything in due time, the way it's supposed to be. And it always works out just fine. And so I don't worry about anything. I just go, okay, well, here it goes. This is what's happening. And then if something seemingly is wrong, I'll go, okay, let me learn from this. Why is this happening? Am I blocking it? Is someone else blocking it? You know, that is going to affect me? Or, you know, what do I have to deal with here to raise this vibration up here for me and maybe others so that we can overcome this hump, right? Yeah. And it could be in a practical way or a spiritual way or whatever.
It feels like it's a lot of trust. I mean, most people can't trust their significant others. How do you trust this faceless spirit that is telling you what to do? I wonder what are ways that people can really know and really know that that voice is going to guide them on the right path no matter what.
That's a tough one because, you know, it's maybe the ego voice. Maybe sometimes the higher voice is squeaking through. It is a matter of trusting and seeing how it turns out. And then you'll get to know the higher voice, how it talks, how it sounds, and so on. And then you'll know, I'm going to trust that voice, not the other one, right?
Can you feel the difference between, I mean, you're clearly attuned to these kind of things. Do you know the difference between your ego voice versus the spirit voice at this point?
Oh, yeah. Ego voice sometimes complains. Ego voice sometimes gets a little pissy, you know. And I go, you know, why? Why are you doing that? Be quiet. And I let it go. Because what's the use of getting pissy? What's the use of getting annoyed? What's the use of, you know, creating a story? You know, the fact is, this is happening. Deal with it. Tap into the higher self and get some wisdom, some solutions, some things that will make life easier. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. 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 So, okay. Practical manifestation. What does that mean to you?
It means we manifest and we're not aware of it. So let's look at the practicalities of it all, right? Yeah, and figure out how things work here on the physical plane and introduce all the higher vibes and guidance and the wonderful laws of the universe and whatever to manifest consciously what that wants, because that's what we are. And then life is better. Life is easier. Life is effortless. Life is great. Life is good. So the practicalities of manifesting consciously, really, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. That is interesting. As I hear people talk about this in different ways, that idea of I'm putting together the puzzle pieces about a lot of things. I mean, who's in charge of the world? What's going on with the extraterrestrial presence? All this show is about putting it all together. It's putting the pieces of the mosaic together. But manifestation, something that stuck with me this time that you just said that made me intrigued is this idea of what spirit wants to manifest through us, wants us to become. That's a little different than just what they were talking about in The Secret. The Secret very much appealed to the ego. It was very much about, you know, you want that parking space? Think about this. You want that dream career? You want this. And then I've heard the other argument, which is, well, is that what your ego wants, or is that your deeper purpose? And that's another evolution of it, the idea of what you're truly meant to become. But then you kind of expanded it even more to, well, what does it want you to become? What does the source want you to become? Do you find that with people's understanding of manifestation, you have to open them up to that broader picture? And how do they take it when you do?
They take it very well. I mean, anybody who comes to my doorstep is ready. I've asked Spirit, said, don't bring me anybody that's not ready to open up.
You never had a psychopath? Never had a sociopath come on over?
Oh, sure. But even then, I see a couple. You know, even then, they open up to it. They go, yeah, because you know. I said, well, I don't know that knows. I just channel that. My channels, if you channel anything, you channel spirit. You don't channel any dead person or anything like that. You don't do that. I teach mediums too. And I said, don't channel just any old anybody. You channel spirit. They can take you over. You don't let anybody in. But it's...
Wait, no, what happens when you channel? Have you seen mediums get led astray by channeling a dead person?
Oh, yeah. I've seen attachments. I've seen people who have gotten possessed, bad attachments, you know, entities of some kind, like succubus. A succubus is quite a common thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's from the Fae world, though. But that's like the third and fourth dimension. I've seen a lot of different things happen to people who didn't know what they're doing. Even getting Reiki attunements can turn out really bad when someone that doesn't have the connection and the power and whatever attunes somebody. I've gotten a lot of people who have been tuned improperly and had to fix them up, unfortunately.
Let me ask you something, Iris. What is interesting about your background and in the way you're putting this all together is that you've dipped into a lot of different belief systems. You're talking about Reiki, you've mentioned Buddhism, you're talking about shamanic healing, and then we get back to dark entities, succubus, and then it all started with Jesus. What is do you have a unified theory of Iris's religion? Is it all one thing? Is it all, or were these all just thought forms around the same spirit? I mean, I don't even know. I feel like I've taken a religious studies course talking to you because you've dipped into so many different things. And if it is all these things, or if you can all just point it to one form of consciousness that takes various different forms, is Jesus even a Christian representation? I mean, what is Jesus then? Who was Jesus? I want to know what is your doctrine that you're not imposing on people, obviously, but yeah, how does it all come together?
I don't have a doctrine. I just believe in what is. And you want to call it spirit, you want to call it God, you want to call it Jesus. Jesus is Christ consciousness, actually, the Buddha in nature. It's your higher self. That's I saw, because the brain was trying to make sense of me connecting with my higher self when I was little. I saw Jesus. So Jesus was that symbol that came to earth to show us, hey, yeah, you're part of God. Here, you're the higher self. You don't connect. There you go. Thank you. You're son of God because you are. And I'm like, well, but like I said, I wasn't taught that. And it just just appeared to me when I was 2 years old. But that's the Christ consciousness, a higher level of consciousness.
So it's all different things. It's all. Yeah. When you look at people that. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a controversial question. I was going to say, when you look at people that go to church still, is there any connection to Christ consciousness at all in the modern Judeo-Christian legacy?
Sure. Some people can even connect with God through a religion, but it depends on the person, and it depends on how they work inside themselves, how much they heal, how much they believe, how much they let go, you know, raise their energy and consciousness through like Buddhism or whatever. The Lama Rinpoche that I speak of is, Lama is a reincarnated Buddha, and they're enlightened beings. And Rinpoche means spiritual teacher. He definitely is for real, because I took him, we went for a picnic a couple of Sundays ago, and then after we finished eating, he was sitting there staring at me with the greatest bliss in his face. So I said, I'll connect with that. So I did. And then all of a sudden I could sense he took ego and put it aside. So I took my ego and put it aside. And then he took ego and he threw it behind me. So I took my ego and I threw it behind me. And then we were in the emptiness.
Wait, this is the person you're starting the temple with? This is the person you're starting the temple with?
Yes. And that is enlightenment. Enlightenment is going back to the source, to the emptiness, to the void, whatever you want to call it. And it's just a glimpse that we always get, a little glimpse. And then you have to balance that glimpse with ego, the material world. Then you get another glimpse, and then you rebalance again. But every time you get a glimpse, you are raised to a higher and higher level. I got to Buddhism because, well, when I was 35, I died on the operating table. And I went up into the sky and I met up with Jesus, and he said, know this. When you know you are love and that you are loved, you will know God. I'm like, okay, that's great. I'm going home though. I said, I'm done. And he said, no, you didn't help all the people you're supposed to help yet. And I'm like, well, okay, why? He goes, because you have to go through some things first to figure things out. And I said, well, why didn't I have a life review? He goes, you're beyond it. But before I made it to Jesus, I saw this great place and I knew it was the place of the gods. And I went, that has to do with Buddhism. So when I came back from that, I was dead for 7 minutes and they were quite astonished I wasn't brain dead. And I said, well, that's a matter of opinion.
Fair enough.
I act that way sometimes. Right? And essentially then it's prompted me to start studying Buddhism when I was 35. And that's when been about 30 years. And then I met up with some monks and I learned meditation from them and mindfulness. And then, you know, and then my teacher later. And, you know, so it was an awakening within the death. That's, you know, near death experiences is just another dream state. Within a different level of awareness. That's all.
Who is this reincarnated Buddha? How did you get in contact with him? Well, where did you first encounter this gentleman?
One of my clients, well, there's two of my clients that know him, but one of my clients said, oh, I met up with Lama Rinpoche, and he's a nice man. You should meet him. I know you have a lot in common. I'm like, okay, well, maybe one of these days. And so she told him about me, and he said, I want to meet her because I want to work with her. I'm like, so she comes and tells me this. I'm like, oh. And so he invited me to a special, it's called a chakra. but I was working, I had clients and I wasn't going to cancel in the last minute. And I said, so I'll make a time. And so I went there and met him. And so we connected and I said, I will help you with your temple. Evidently I'm supposed to do this. And I had a dream about him about 2 months before that, about a 7-story temple. It was a Chinese temple though, which is odd. And I walked in there and there he was. And so I already knew he was coming. So I just was waiting for it to be when he was ready to, and he wanted to work with me.
You have the best referral strategy ever, which is things just come to you in dreams and visions, and then they show up and go, yeah, actually, no, I was waiting for you. You don't even need the middle person. They're just there. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. If you're a recruiter, take note. Maybe this flow thing is going to help you find your next new hire. But I mean, this is why is life so effortless for you versus other people, you think?
Well, I trust and I accept now most things, you know. I mean, you know, my life is not perfect. My husband has some issues and, you know, it can be a struggle at times, but right.
I'm not saying it's perfect either, but I know that some people would just never have a, I know I've struggled with it too, purpose, this question of, what, how am I supposed to spend my day? What am I supposed to do? And then for you to just have dreams and then for them to show up and be like, actually, yes, Iris, I was in your dream because I've been waiting for you for a long time. Some people would really want that. I know that I still want it to a certain degree. What would you say to those people?
Say, well, when it's time, it's time. You have to be patient. Patient is a higher virtue of the soul. And so you have to develop that. Sorry, but that's how it works. That's what I say to them.
Patience. How much more patience do I have to have? I mean, is there patience that leads to nothing? Could you be patient till the end of your life and never have this vision of what you're supposed to be doing?
Some people won't know their purpose, won't find their destiny. They're not here to do that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some people are young souls and they're here just to experience, just to go wild, just to go crazy. Some are older souls who figured some things out and they, they're getting, it's just like life stages within the physical plane.
Now, wouldn't it be nice if I had this vision that I was one of those people that was supposed to not have my purpose? I mean, I part of me wants you to go look at me right now and go, Greg, oh yeah, of course you don't know exactly what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to just experience and party around. In a way, not having a purpose could be my purpose. What do you think about that?
Well, the purpose of being a party hound or something like that is okay, really not a purpose as much as it is that's what you came to do. A higher purpose is a little different. When you become more mature, right, then you go out looking for a job. Same sort of thing. When a soul becomes more mature, then it looks for its purpose. And it goes, hey, okay, I had my fun now. Let's move on. Right?
Yeah. I mean, short of, you know, booking 10 sessions with you, is there anything else I could do to know what my soul's destiny is supposed to be in this lifetime?
You yourself personally, it might be hard for you to really grasp that because you need to connect with yourself's soul. So I mean, that's why a lot of people, you know, go to mediums and to seers or tarot card readers or something like that. Seer is a different thing from just a fortune teller, right? Fortune tellers, they read what is on a card or something, but seers know things. And then they can give you guidance in that. It's very simplistic sometimes. Like one of my clients that I saw for five years, they said, your purpose is here is to be the best mother you can be and you're failing, I'm sorry, I said to her. And she goes, you're right. And I said, yeah. And she goes, she says, I got this special astrology write-up on this. And that was what they said. You're supposed to be the best mother. You're supposed to be here. And well, they didn't say you're failing at it, but that's your purpose. And I said, so it could be something so simple, because that's a lesson, that's a learning experience to help you raise your energy and consciousness and get to a higher purpose. But it is a purpose, if you want to say, yeah.
Could it change? I mean, this topic, this idea that reality is fluid, and everything's constructed. I mean, what's to say that your soul's path can't slip into a completely different quantum leap, that you can't say, you know what? All of a sudden, I've decided in this lifetime, I want to be an entrepreneur. I mean, are you really going to say that, sorry, soul says you're not going to do it. You're here to fail at being a father. That's your soul's purpose. Yet that is, you're not even here to succeed at being a father. You're here to fail at it. That's what your soul said. I mean, are people really locked in on that?
No, she wasn't supposed to fail at it.
She was supposed to succeed. But what if your purpose is to fail? I mean, that sounds bleak. Is it ever? It wouldn't ever be that dark. There's no way Source wants you to fail as your purpose, but maybe it does. I don't know.
Look at it this way. These are the lessons. These are the lessons that'll help you, right?
I guess what I was going to say is, can you change the lesson? Is there any way to change the lesson you're supposed to experience in this lifetime? Or is the soul got it locked in? Is the contract in? Signed, sealed. Here's your lesson. Sorry, you're not going to be a pop star. You need to learn this.
Well, there's some things that are written in stone and some things that you just have to figure out, and you can change it. Yeah. Yeah, you can, to a degree. Your book of life is nothing. Your book of life is right here in the ascending heart area.
That gives me some optimism.
Mm-hmm. You see, this is so, so complex, but so simple at the same time. So it's so very hard to explain it all in 1 hour or, you know, 45 minutes.
I know, I'm really trying to get it. I'm really trying to get at it. But this is helpful. I mean, it is, or at least, okay, if we're not going to get it, if it's so complex and so simple, what is the smallest step I can take to understand the complexity a little more? I mean, is this the type of stuff you're going over in, is some of this in the practical manifestation stuff? I mean, this feels a little different in a way. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what would you say for someone that wants to understand this, to begin to even get a grasp?
Well, sometimes it takes a long time. That's why I see my clients quite a long time for them to grasp something as simple as, yeah, you know, figure out this lesson, or, you know, you can overcome this, or it, because of the karmic energy of many lifetimes too, that you have to work through sometimes. It's just not this life you're dealing with too.
Iris, I think I figured it out. I think the universe is telling me your purpose is to figure out the complexity and the simplicity. My life's purpose is to figure out the answer to figuring out my life's purpose. Perhaps, I mean, that feels more aligned with what I'm doing. I don't know. What is your initial take on that?
What your purpose is?
Yeah, or at least what I just said there. Me asking these questions feels like part of what my soul is asking me to do. It's saying, hey, she said it's complex. Don't just stop there. Figure it out. Have her on a second time. You know, I mean, that's at least what my heart is telling me right now. What is your take?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That, you know, if that's what it's telling you, because your soul communicates through the heart, then you do it, because that's a good step upwards and forwards, you know. So if you want to do it a second time, sure, I'll do it a second time. That's great with
us. Yeah. No, I mean, you're so kind. You really are. That's what I love. I mean, you have all these abilities and gifts, but you've been, even before we booked this, I mean, you've been so gracious about this. And I think, I mean, there's no better person to write a book called co-author, A Pessimist's Guide to Manifesting. Tell me this, who are the pessimists? Who are these pessimists you're dealing with? Was it you at first? Are you trying to appeal to people that just don't buy into any of this stuff at all? Where in the world did that title come from?
It came from Dan. He's really coined a lot of great phrases. He's really good at that. But it came from Dan because he said, we're all pretty much pessimists to some level or degree. And I said, yeah, we are. We went through a few different titles, but we both liked that one the best. So yes, we're all pessimists to some sort of degree, and we have to overcome that. Not to be, oh, I'm all sunshine and roses and optimistic and oh yes, you know. No, it's to go, yeah, I got to deal with this pessimist stuff and see where I can go after that, right? And I can then maybe manifest consciously.
But I don't get that. I don't sense that you're a pessimist at all.
Sorry?
Yeah, I don't feel that you're pessimistic. Are you?
No. I've never really been a pessimist. Sometimes I've been a deep realist.
But yeah.
Not a pessimist.
Yeah, like I mean, I guess pessimist is a good, well, here's what's interesting. I think there's also, I wonder if this book is more of a skeptic's guide to manifesting in some ways, or a cynic's guide. Because, yeah, I mean, if you read the byline, is if you feel like the law of attraction and other universal laws are not working for you, if you're just confused by the concept, then it's the time for you to read this book. I definitely, there is confusion about it. But I wouldn't say I'm completely pessimistic about it working. Maybe I'm pessimistic about my understanding that it could work for me. Do you think there are a lot of people out there that just see this law of attraction stuff and go, yep, no, doesn't work. I've tried it. Manifestation is crap. It's garbage. I mean, is that what you're trying to fight here?
Well, we were just trying to show people, well, Dan was trying to show that the secret wasn't all that in a bag of chips. And I was just right. Like, well, we're supposed to write this to help whomever it helps. That's what it's about for me. And it's helped a lot of people. And I am glad that it has. Yeah, because they get caught up in the negative and they get caught up in, well, this is the way it is and it's a struggle, right? Whereas we're trying to show them, like, no, there's something more. And if you surrender the struggle and you surrender your ego and you connect higher, it's not going to be a struggle. And you accept what's supposed to be. You don't have a specific outcome because that might go against that, which is supposed to be. And that's always best. That is always best. You know, as I have sometimes tried to think, well, what if I had an outcome like this? And then I say, no, I'm surrendering. And that which came was a much better outcome. I went, okay, good. I trust you. You bring it on. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it would be good to know these 20 other universal laws. Where do the laws come from? Are they hermetic principles? Does it come from shamanism? People have always talked about the universal laws, but I've never quite understood their origin.
There's different origins because there's the hermetic principles, but they only cover a few. 7 to 12, I think. Then there's other principles that they're saying there's 108, and some say there's 128. You know, it just is dependent. You know,
so you just chose the 20 best ones that are really going to get at the pessimists.
Yeah, the ones that made more sense how to manifest consciously.
Yeah. Do you think, at the end of all your work, what do people in the world need more of? Do they need a shaman or do they need a behavior therapist? If you were to diagnose the planet right now, what would help people the most?
They need whatever they need. Everybody is different, but they absolutely need to connect with their true self. And if they can, higher, right? To the higher self, then maybe to God self. But that is a rare person who reaches the God self.
Who would you vote for first? A shaman candidate or a behavior therapist candidate as a prime minister of Canada? Who would you trust first?
I trust whomever it would make most sense in what they're doing with whatever they are.
Do you feel into people's energies with stuff like that when you tap in? I mean, I know the United States is kind of in a bad place, but have you ever looked at a famous political figure and gone, oh yeah, that person's a healer? They're not saying it, but that person is tuned into something.
Have I ever looked at any political figure and figured they were a healer?
Yeah. Is it that hopeless? Are we that hopeless? Was Marianne Williamson the best hope we ever had? Oh, you don't follow politics. Wow. Yeah, that's a higher frequency existence, probably.
Yeah, because essentially that is going to take time away for something that I can do that's higher. You know, I do understand what's going on in the world. I know about COVID. I know about what's happening in Afghanistan and such, but I don't really get to.
Yeah, you're transcending this earthly realm. I feel that too. I definitely feel called to something higher than what I read about in the papers. But to get the world there, I mean, I guess they always say be the change you want to see in the world. Do you have hope for humanity? Are you a pessimist or an optimist about where we're all headed?
I have hope for souls, and we're all souls. So whatever happens to humanity depends on what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you've given very diplomatic answers. I know I've asked tough questions here, but you've just let them roll off. That's the thing. That's your trust. I can ask you anything. You go, yep. You know what? Here's the answer. This is what this person needs to hear right now. Which, I mean, if that's not flowing into abundance, I don't know what is. I very interesting stuff. And in this temple, I mean, is there anything, you starting this temple right now, should we expect to see any press about it? Are you going to have people come to this temple when they can all move out of their houses again? What is this project looking like for you?
It's looking like first setting up the Rinpoche to start teaching and doing meditation. So connecting him with the community and spiritually. And he has a nonprofit organization, to expanding that and connecting with some charities and starting to work on that level and start fundraising. I have a couple of people who are on board with that, and we will start fundraising. The temple will be a little ways away before it's going to be found, because one thing in Victoria, there's not much available to rent and or buy. So that's part of the thing. But we're going to start it up as a more spiritual and more community-wise event, if you want to call it. Or
are you going to tell people, hey, here's where you can meet the Buddha?
That's sorry,
I want to know. I want to know if people can, that sounded pretty good. I'd love to go to a temple where I'm going to see the Buddha, and especially experience bliss without even needing to see a word, or say a word rather. I wonder what kind of consciousness, I wonder what the Schumann resonance is going to be after you get a bunch of people meditating in that space.
I'm sorry, you cut out again.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You know what? Let me take it back. Let me see. I mean, it sounds like this space is going to be a really higher consciousness place. And you have the Buddha there, supposedly. Do you know this person's the Buddha? You know this? I mean, are we talking the Bodhi tree, the Buddha, the thing we see in Asian restaurants, that golden statue with the belly? I mean, is this the reincarnation at this temple, you think?
It depends on the school that the Rinpoche is involved in. There's different schools of Buddhism. He has a shrine already set up where he's living, but essentially it's about helping others through the word of the Buddha. And there are many Buddhas, and these many Buddhas come to help others. When a Buddha returns, they're called a Bodhisattva, and then they relinquish their freedom, really, you know, from nirvana, from the void, whatever. So he only calls himself a monk, though, and he doesn't allow me to call him Lamala, because Lamala is a formal way of, you know, so he said, no, you call me Gatsang Rinpoche only. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. Because he does not want to be reminded that he is a enlightened being. You know, he's like, I'm a monk here. I'm here to help. I'm here to do for others.
Are you hoping to be an enlightened being? Are you an enlightened being?
We all are enlightened beings. We're all just working towards it. Some are really, really slow getting there, and some are really, really doing it much faster. So you need to remember this. That's what it is about. So it's called the remembering.
Yeah. Very interesting. You're quite a character, Iris Turner. Very fascinated by everything you're doing. Yes, everybody needs to check out these books, co-written with Daniel Alexa, A Pessimist's Guide to Manifesting, A Practical Approach to Making the Law of Attraction and 20 Other Universal Laws Work for You. As well, we're going to link to this as well, the other book that you co-wrote, which is, of course, Practical Manifesting. And look, I hope that we'll post the link. I know you have a Facebook group about this as well. And is there anywhere we can learn about this temple yet, or are the details in your Facebook group? What's the best way that people can tune into that?
To tune into what? Sorry, you kind of broke up.
What's the best way that people can learn about the temple?
On my Facebook page under Orisha Turner. And if somebody wants to chat or connect in some more profound way, I'd be happy for them. So you can post my Facebook page.
Absolutely. Well, I'll share that as well. See, if you feel called, she's available. And she's a high vibing shaman. I mean, I love it. This has been very interesting. Again, I thank you for having me dip my toes into the complexity of understanding the soul. Of course, I wasn't going to get that done in an hour and 15 minutes. But you did a very good job so far, bringing me closer to understanding. So I'm grateful that you've come on. Practicalmanifesting.com as well. Iris Turner, thanks so much for sharing your understanding about reality with me and all the listeners. This has been great.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Iris Turner, thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. If you like this podcast, make sure to go into the show notes and click on the link to rate Open Loops and leave a review, even a few words. Help. Love to hear your comments as well. Send me a message on Instagram at TheGregBornstein. You manifested this. I keep telling you, it's not your fault. It's just your direct reflection of me. And oh, by the way, it's my little sister Michelle's 26th birthday today. Happy birthday, Michelle. Love ya. Talk to all you soon.